Good. So I'm at Deepwater Farms here, and you had a look at the videos that I sent, and yeah, if you want to pick up where we left off, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
We start from the beginning.
We did. You did a excellent site visit, so to speak, and I think this establishes, I want to say, a prototype or a way that would normally be looked at, because ultimately, whether they implement vortexing en masse, so to speak, or in right away, the evaluation is necessary. And because once they do it, I have stated before that when you get a vortex unit and you put it in, as long as it works, it retains its value. Its value is in working, not in. It doesn't depreciate. The vortex is what it is, and it is subject. Things are subject to change, but as long as it's working, its value is there. So, so in that evaluation that you did, there probably are a few things that'll come up. But one of the first things that popped up for me was, they have this oxygen, a liquid oxygen infuser, I guess we call it.
Yeah.
And it sits there, and it, I'm going to call it, it seethes. It sits there, and it periodically off gases, and they tell you to, okay, be aware of your proximity to it, et cetera,
yes,
et cetera. And it's doing it because of resistance that it is encountering within the flow itself.
Okay.
So we've got this source water from the city, and it has what it has in there. That source water likely has got chlorination and any other things that they do to treat it.
And soon to have fluoride.
Yeah, it would be presumed to have all of those things. And as a consequence of having those elements within it, there's a certain level of resistance. There's a certain level of friction that is there. That and you could say there's a certain level of chaos. So chaos, friction, resistance, they're all, you could say, synonymous terms. And so as a result of that, the that liquid oxygen infusion, and even with the other things that they are putting in their nano bubbles and everything else, they still are experiencing enough of that for that thing to sit there like a, I'm just going to say, a volcano, sitting there trying to relieve itself.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so just to correct, they don't have any nano bubbles yet.
Oh.
But it's something they're considering as well. So where you saw the plumbing where that oxygen line connects to, that would be the most natural location to install a nanobubble generator that has a fitting on it that you can, implement a gas such as oxygen.
Okay.
Or ozone or any one of the other ones.
Okay.
So that to me is the natural location that if they were to put a nanobubble generator in, that would be the natural location.
Okay.
And then downstream would be where we would look at vortex generators. And so the question is more how far downstream. And as an example, the water is pumped from those 500-gallon tanks that are submerged in the concrete. That, let's just say that's at the starting end of the racks or the beds. The water is pumped down to the far end of the beds, of the racks, and goes through a distribution. So it's coming down a 2-inch line that's vertical, which you may see in the videos, and then it splits off into 4 1-inch lines, and it's 1-inch lines that go to the beds. Okay. And and then there's one video that shows inside the bed where we put our hand in just to get a feel for the water flow.
Right.
And that is basically just a nipple, if you will, that that feeds the water in, under pressure, of course, into the beds. And, you know, if they just planted or just seeded, they'll adjust that valve. They have a valve that they're adjusting the water flow back a little bit. Once things are seeded, I don't know the exact timing, but when things are seeded and things have started to grow, they'll open up that valve so that they get full flow from the tank. So if we worked our way forward and backwards, one potential that they wanted to experiment with is they do have one of the half-inch PW50s, and they thought, okay, well, could we put that at the very, 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 very end right inside the bed and just do some, you know, get a fitting and put it on there just to begin experimenting, because that's the one that they have right now.
Right.
Then as we work our way backwards, we have the choice of either 4 1-inch units on those horizontal lines that feed the beds, the four beds, or 1 2-inch unit on the vertical before it splits off to the four individual lines, right? And so obviously there's a little, you know, there's a few 90 degree bends involved in that, but you know, hopefully it's far enough out that that it's not going to make that big of a difference. So yeah, one question would be, is it more, what are the implications of choosing the 1 2-inch versus 4 1-inch?
Well, the 2-inch, well, the 2-inch is going to give you more more potential flow velocities and pressures. However, of course, the 4 1-inches is going to help you distribute it. I don't know if the distribution is the same. I mean, you've got one covering the entire size. It's enabled by the size of the line itself and the pressures that that line will do. But if you've got, I don't really see, I think the best way of doing that, you know, is actually just simply doing it in two places and comparing.
But that's not a realistic option.
No, right? I concur.
You're either going to buy 4 1-inch or you're going to buy 1 2-inch. Why would you do one and why would you do the other, right?
Yeah, well, I guess it posed, I know a choice simply has to be made. The one that I wanted to get at with respect to that oxygen, every time we put a Vortex unit on, you are essentially reducing the friction in the area that's affected. And these would be cumulative in their effect. So essentially, you put one on, it reduces. It immediately establishes a lower level of resistance in the system itself. I think the other thing, and it may get back to your question, your other question too, because I agree with you. There's practicality in all of this. But when we're looking at the fact that let's say decentralized, we are redistributing or we are establishing new areas of stability, and that area of stability is characterized by reduced friction. It's also characterized by the more efficient delivery of certain things. And I'm, for example, like an availability, such as certain elements that are in the soil that are needed, that would include oxygen. So the lack or the, go ahead.
You said in the soil, you say?
No, I don't mean in the soil. The water volume is the soil.
In the water, okay.
The water,
so you're talking about delivery of nutrients, et cetera.
Yeah.
That nutrients, fertilizers, et cetera, will be enhanced.
Well, yeah. If it's in the water, it's going to also, the water is the soil now in this particular situation.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
The I don't want to use the word problems. These are simply factors. The factor is that the soil, slight, you know, water, okay, parenthetically.
Well, there is a bit of soil in the form of their planting material that, you know, this that is in the trays.
Yeah,
substrates.
There is right. Organic material, and there are these other things, but ultimately that information is in the water itself, and but in addition to that, the other information has to do with the things that the municipality has put into the water too,
right.
And so there is a
meaning what. Expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, chlorination, fluoridation,
fluoride,
whatever they put in there.
Yes.
Okay. So,
and whatever they haven't filtered out, you know, because we know that they aren't filtering every chemical out that they should be.
Well,
right?
They are not filtering it out, but in addition to that, one thing that is not being done at all. We talk about the fact that water retains what's called a memory of everything
yes.
that it has encountered up until a point of it being reset again.
Yeah.
And see, resetting is like degaussing of the information that's in that water. And in the absence of a vortex generator, that's not done at all.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
again,
so you might have mm-hmm. so-called clean water, meaning they filtered the, you know, the elements out that are a concern, according to, you know, Health Canada, et cetera, yet you still have unstructured and chaotic water.
Well, you also have the memory. We talk about
the memory, yes.
We talk about the homeopathic effect. See, our science has dismissed homeopathy for... You know, it's been around for 200 some odd years. It has been a proven remedy. And in a way of speaking, when and the process of creating a homeopathic remedy was essentially to dissolve, to eliminate the physical presence of whatever the remedy was. And they call it succussion. And the succussion was potentized by excitation.
Okay.
So you had to shake, and then you dilute and you shake. You do it is excitation, but to potentize that remedy was to continue to dilute it and dilute it and dilute it until there's no evidence of the actual remedy in the water. At which point it was stronger and stronger.
Right.
Now, we are practicing the opposite of that. We are basically attempting to get rid of the dissolved solids, so to speak, or we're attempting to dissolve the solids, whatever the term is, and yet by reducing, by that act of reduction, you are actually intensifying the ill effects of it.
Right.
The actual answer is to clear the memory, which science ignores since they can't measure it and no one has given them permission to think, to see results as opposed to get something from a book. Then they dismiss it and they keep the impression, they keep the memory there. Now,
yes.
I mentioned that guy, Rustam Roy, and I think he talks about homeopathy as well, but he, what was my point about Rustam Roy relative to this? He does talk about the homeopathic effect, and it's simply the fact that he talks about the memory of water, and the thing that I was bringing up is that he came up with a term, he calls it epitaxy.
Okay.
Epitaxy is the process of imprinting. So wherever the water has been, whatever it has encountered, it's gone over these, if it's in a riverbed, And there are rocks there of various mineral compositions. As an example, the information of those rocks is transferred into the water. It's imprinted into the water volume of the river water as it passes over. The process of transference of that information given by the rocks, received and accepted by the water, the term is called epitaxy.
Okay.
And so here it is, that applies without judgment, or should I say in legal terms, without prejudice. As far as the water is concerned, it takes whatever it is. So therefore, you put fluoride in, chloride, chlorine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's in there, and simply trying to get it out, trying to filter it out, off-gassing and everything else is not a complete thing. The imprint itself needs to simply be expunged, degaussed, erased.
Okay.
This is what your vortex generators do as well.
Okay.
See, we don't embrace the unseen, even though we are influenced by it.
Okay.
Okay. So this way, I mean, you talk about a case for vortex generators everywhere. That's something. Now that would be something I would, even if I got one that's on a main or something like that, to clear memory. There's a use case for that right off the bat. Now, in addition to all of that, we're talking about a distribution or decentralized distribution of units in various places. It would really be cool if I looked at Scott Gary's experience that he had with the small units with his cannabis, where hemp, and how those plants just, wow, you know, they just had this great response just by using a small unit like the PW50. They just had so much. But see, realizing even the water that was being put on had that memory cleared. It wasn't being informed by the other stuff that was still in play.
Okay, so circling back to the infrastructure here, we have water that is, the main tank, the main 500-gallon tank, is also their mixing tank for where they add their nutrients, okay?
Yep.
It's also the, you could say the exhaust tank, or, where the recirculation comes. So the short story is water is pumped from that big tank all the way down to the far end. It then enters the beds through a split manifold, let's call it. It comes down a 2-inch line and then splits off into a 1-inch line for each of the four beds, okay? And then that water slowly flows through the bed at the far end, if you will, back to the main end or the beginning end, and goes into a standpipe down into the floor and back into the tank, okay? So there are, a number of different options as far as where to place a generator, but the easiest at this moment in time to test one would be at the very end of the water pipe, which is feeding the bed, or feeding one bed, for example. We could test it because we have one unit here.
Right.
So you'll see the one video where it shows the nipple or the very end of that nipple inside the bed itself. We put there was a picture of the hand there, a video of the hand, kind of seeing the water, the various water pressures. So would that be a location to install a PW50 at the half inch? And if so, what should one expect? Now, realizing that we're not going to see the benefit of, say, reduced friction because we're already at the end of our plumbing, right? But what would we see, given that we are vortexing the water that is going into the beds itself as far as direct contact with the plants?
Well, that fundamental thing that I just mentioned about cleared memory, that water is going to have its memory cleared. You might get some really demonstrable changes on the basis of that alone.
Okay.
On the absence of that information, along with the higher level of activity of the water itself. See, the crops are living. They are aware, and they are far more. As you go to there, you remember the book, The Secret Life of Plants?
Yes.
Those, they are far more sensitive than we are.
Yes.
And so, you know something, we have nothing to lose. You know, if you, first of all, the one thing I can guarantee is that that water is not the same.
Now, will not be the same afterwards, yes.
Exactly. Now, what the plant does with it, the plant's going to do with it.
Yeah.
Okay, but the plant...
A half-inch unit on a bed that big with that much water flow is adequate or appropriate?
Look, Lee, no one has done this before.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
So ask me the question. The point basically is put it on knowing.
Yep.
Now, the thing that we do know is those plants are far more sensitive than we are. They literally can sense our intentions. So if they are that sensitive, I mean, you know, in that book, they talked about it. You know, some people were decided where they were going to burn the plants and stuff like that. The plant had a fucking conniption.
It had a knowing. No, I remember.
All right.
Let's
take that in. We have the confirmation on many levels about the clearing, that water holds and retains memory. And we also know that the vortexing is a way to clear the memory. That memory, that imprint, that degaussing can happen through the vortex.
Yes.
So just put it on and see what happens. We have an expectation of a difference.
So one other question I have is the beds themselves underneath, you know, all the plants are planted in a coconut coir substrate.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So you can imagine that substrate gets, first of all, in the bottom of the beds. So you got a fairly high concentration of organic material in the bottom of the beds that obviously drains through the drains and the standpipe and back into the big tank, right?
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, also in their tray washing machine, all of their nozzles continue to get plugged regularly because of that organic material, that substrate, the coconut coir material.
All right.
So running the water through a vortex generator somewhere along the line, what would one expect as far as the pulverizing, I'm going to use my term, of that organic material and the breaking down of it into smaller components?
Well, that also has to do with volume. Because anything that gets through the vortex unit itself is going to be broken down, yes. We also know that the vortex water is going to percolate, is going to absorb, is going to penetrate more effectively than when it's not vortex. And so you're going to see...
So penetrate when you expand on that, penetrate what? Penetrate the root walls? What else would it penetrate?
It penetrates anything that it's needing to go through. If it's a blood-brain barrier, if it's a root wall, if there's a bunch of dirt sitting there, it's still going to get through it more effectively than if it's not vortex.
Right.
So puddling, for example, things like that, where and backups... It's going to be reduced.
Okay.
All right. It's this in, especially when we're talking about the PW50, it's also dependent upon the pressures and velocities and the capacities associated with the unit itself.
Okay. So the PW50, like I say, would be at the end of the line on which is the beginning of the bed itself, but the end of the plumbing line.
Yeah.
And the pressures there are pretty significant. I think the pumps, if I recall, I saw the meter on the pumps is that they're up there. They have the potential, whether they're set for that high or not, of 100 gallons per minute. So it's fairly high PSI or water flow that's going through those. what would one expect with the having the half inch unit on there? Is it going to restrict that flow in any way?
I would imagine that it would. If we go back to the specs, I'm not looking at the spec sheet of the PW50, but a half inch line had a capacity, I think, of 125 gallons per minute.
Okay. Okay. Well, so it should be fine then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the pump's going at 100 gallons per minute. So that should be fine.
All right. Well.
Okay. Great. And like I say, they dial it up or down depending on the stage or the stage of the crop cycle itself, right? In the very beginning, they manually turn the valve down so the flow is lower. And then towards the end of the crop, it's at full flow. They open ride. So we're going to see, because we have a recirculating system, where I'm going with this is talking about friction and friction in the pumps and in the line. So, for example, if we had a vortex generator more centralized at the head end, like very close to the pumps, for example,
yep,
we're going to see a benefit in reduced friction, et cetera, reduced pump usage, reduced electricity usage in the pumps itself, if we can get it either before or, you know, immediately after the pumps, right?
Yep.
But because we have a recirculating system, you know, even with the PW50 at the end of the plumbing, but the beginning of the bed, as that water cycles itself through and back into the main tank, over time, I have to imagine that a certain amount of that reduced surface tension will still find its way in, even if you didn't have a larger unit at the head end. Would that be accurate?
I tend to agree. The caveat that comes up for me, at least, is that, of course, all of the interactions that water has after it is now imprinted. And so when it goes through the vortex unit again, is being, you know, the memory is being cleared. Fortunately, though, the imprinting is not with, it's not being imprinted with chemicals, okay?
Yes.
So that's good. I mean, that is a good thing, okay. In fact.
All right, so if we start working our way back, you know, from the end of the plumbing, you have the potential of putting PW50 on the very end, which is that nipple that's inside the bed itself. If we work our way back, those are one-inch lines that are feeding those four beds, and then you work your way back from that, it's one two-inch line that is feeding the four one-inch lines.
Okay.
So if you had to make a choice of either one 2-inch or four 1-inch, what would you choose and why?
I would be inclined to have the four 1-inch units.
Okay.
Because they are they're closer to the point of use. Obviously,
but if you had the PW50 on the very end of that 1-inch line, why would you use a 1-inch versus the 1/2-inch on the very end?
Then there's again a place of just simply choosing, and on your logic, 2 inches sounds better, and just go with it.
So say that again then. So a 2-inch versus four 1-inch or 4 1/2-inch.
We certainly know that the capacity. Yeah, we simply know that the capacity of a 2-inch pressures and everything else are greater. I mentioned 125 for the PW50. That's 250 for the 1-inch, and and then the 2-inch. It was at least 500.
500 gallons per minute.
Yeah.
Flow.
Yeah.
But if we're at 100 max on our pump, we are not, you know, taking full advantage of the flow of the 2-inch. So why would, and given that we're at the very end of the bed anyways, whether it's a 2-inch, one 2-inch, 4 1-inch or 4 half-inch, right? We're literally within feet of each other at the very end of the bed for that installation. Why would we go to a 1-inch that gives us 250 gallons per minute when the PW50 gives us 125 gallons per minute at the very end of that?
Well, you got practicality, you got logistics, and you just got common sense. The PW50 is just kind of the best answer under the circumstances. It takes care and the
I would say that it makes sense to me now as we talk this through to put the, you know, put 4 PW50s at the very end of the lines.
Yep.
And potentially, if there is going to be an additional one in the system somewhere, it should be up at the front or the head end, close to the pumps. And that would make sense as the location to put a 2-inch or put something bigger. And then you're enhancing, you know, all the benefits that you just talked about, but you're enhancing it further back or further at the central source of the system. Or and, coming out of the big 500-gallon tank somewhere.
And not to mention, the final thing is so happy to hear. The final thing has to be with cost. I mean, hell, you put 4 PW50s down there, you get all of this stuff for what the PW50 cost versus a 1-inch unit or 2-inch unit. Much different. Not to mention the weight of it. Everything else, the PW50 is just the answer for all this.
Yeah, I think so, the very end, yeah. And then, if anything, we can explore, you know, at the head end, it sounds to me like pre all their pumps would be the potential best location if there was a decision to put one at the head end, putting it before the pumps.
Yeah.
So that you maximize the benefit on the pumps would seem to be the best location. Do you concur with that?
I concur. And again, the water that's coming in has had its memory cleared. We're elevating the step of clearing memory as a requirement. If you didn't do anything else, you clear the memory of that water.
Yes.
All right.
At the head end.
Exactly. You don't want water with PTSD coming into your place. All right.
Okay. I'm here right now, actually, deep water. So I am looking again at the infrastructure, and it would be fairly simple plumbing exercise to introduce a 2-inch unit immediately prior to the pump.
That would
and then
be,
everything downstream is getting the benefit.
That will affect everything in the place because the plants, when we start to acknowledge that they are living, they are living intelligent. You call it beings. I don't care. Whatever you want to call it, but we have to. You don't have to because we're living in a world that doesn't appreciate those things even now.
Yep.
So we are. You know, if the people there at deep water want to continue to say evolve the distinction, of what makes their things work better than anything else, is starting to acknowledge these facts that our present methods do not. So the fact that the plants themselves are living, I'll give you an example. One of my buddies. I never met him in person, but he is one of my buddies, and he passed earlier this year. But he placed a number of our units in a farm in North Carolina, and they started off with a single unit. They put some skin in the game. They bought a 4-inch unit, which they promptly, you may have heard the story, they promptly put on a 6-inch line, connected to the irrigation thing. They ran the entire season, and it went from one of the poorest producing crops to one of the out of 200, one of the five or so best. Okay,
fantastic.
Okay, so The point and what brought this up for me and how it applies right now is that essentially the moment or right after they turn the water on, the crop, which was corn, is going into an irrigation system, immediately noticed, oh, something is different. And so one of the first things it began to do was to set up dual stalks, right? It had a single stalk, you know, where based on its resources and what it was getting out of the water, it immediately began to form a second stalk so that it would be going, this is what was, it was prepared to do given what was available. But it didn't follow through with it. It started it, and part of that, I presume, was due to the time in the season that they installed it. So they did not install the unit at the beginning of the season or even before the season in prepping. You know, even if they had prepped the seeds, for example, with Vortex water. There are a whole bunch of places where all this can go, but my point is, the crop itself in the ground started reconfiguring itself initially simply on the change in that water because it recognized the difference.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So given that we have a 2-week crop cycle here, you know, when you mentioned before about helping or assisting, supporting the plants to reach their full genetic potential.
Yep.
Can you comment on that?
Well,
in
this setting, I think it's the same. Everything applies. The genetic potential goes with the plant, first of all. So, given the proper conditions and factors and environment, it's going to do that without thinking about it.
Yeah.
So ultimately, if it's not doing it, it's because of various factors that are already in place. So, and one of the things has to do with the memory of wherever the water's been before.
Yes.
So we remove that, then we're going to move toward. See, nature is going to go toward its best under all circumstances, if and as it's possible. Our part as stewards, so to speak, is to basically get the obstacles out the way. You know, and so there's a lot of other, I think, ongoing, perhaps evolving conversations. Oh, there's the other thing. I might as well mention it because that was outside of that oxygen situation. The other thing that I would be telling them right off the bat is to turn that pH adjuster off.
What pH adjuster? What?
The acid.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Well, they have their I guess their nutrients apparently, as I understand it, need to be at a certain pH or maintained in order to be absorbable or better absorbable
in their current paradigm. Yes, I understand all that. You got to cut that shit out. You cannot. You got to turn it off or just not put it on. And I always say, and monitor. I'm not, you know, I mean, I understand they have what they are used to doing. But what they're used to doing has gotten them what they got. So so the point basically is that the water, the memory has been in, the memory has been cleared. That's one thing. And you don't know to what extent that the pH issues are associated with the crap and the information that's still in the water.
Right.
So you've cleared the memory. Now, I didn't say take out your nutrients. I didn't take out your fertilizers and the food. I didn't say that. Yeah. But there is no...
Just take out the acids.
There's no nutritional need for sulfuric acid.
Yes.
Turn it off.
So that acid is purely to lower the pH.
That's its purpose. Okay.
And that is because we got pH water that is, or municipal water that has a pH that the plants don't like.
Absolutely. In addition to that, it's producing more and more protons from an electrical conductivity standpoint. It's having, it has a number of different effects that need to be acknowledged, recognized, and therefore common sense in this paradigm says don't even start. It's not business as usual because this is not water as usual. See, right. Now the other thing about it, and I mentioned this before relative to the penetrability, infiltration rates, and everything else that are enhanced and increased with vortexing, the friction reduction. That means it gets stuff into wherever it's got to go easier and in larger amounts.
Okay.
You don't want to be putting sulfuric acid in under those circumstances to a living thing.
Right.
That was my other. That was my other big thing relative to that.
One other item here. I just want to jump over to their tray washing machine.
Yep.
So we did experiment with dosing hypochlorous solution in, and they were happy with that. They were able to eliminate an extra step, and because we're testing out an on-site ECA generator here for them producing hypochlorous.
Sure.
And one of the challenges with this machine, because of this organic material, is that all of the spray nozzles that are being used to spray the trays as they go through this machine are constantly plugging up with that same organic material, the coconut core. If we ran the water through a PW50 before going through the nozzles, what should one expect to have happen to that organic material?
My first thing is that I would expect the clogging to reduce or stop. Now, the organic material, there's always dependencies, and it's just simply depending on how much of this stuff is and how dense it is. But I do know that vortexing would actually help penetrate and help break that stuff down. I don't know where the stuff would go in the absence of stopping or being stopped by the nozzles. Where else does it have to go?
Well, in a drain line. It's all going out a drain line, and that, you know, that's, you know, a problem in itself because all of that material is going down a drain line and into a sump pump, and, you know, all of that stuff has to be manually filtered all the time, or they're, you know, it's clogging up their filters, if you will. So whether it's a filter on the machine itself or a filter down in the sump pumps, vortex generator can at least reduce the size of the clumps of the material into smaller clusters, I guess would be the way to say it. Is that something that we could expect to have happen?
I would be anticipating a more constant use of it, that those spray nozzles would stop. I mean, we've had places or situations, for example, with misters, you know, in Arizona, for example, and because the water itself was not vortexed and therefore high calcium agglomeration, they would constantly or frequently be clogging up and not available, you know, as 110, 120 degrees out and the mister is clogged up. But putting a vortex unit on basically eliminated that, you know, and then they just ran. So again, these are expectations, they are anticipations based on what we see happening to the cluster sizes. We know that the cluster sizes are reduced in size. We know that the elements themselves are not eliminated, but they are so much smaller to get through the openings. And they also are superfluidic. That's where the reduction of friction comes in, because the movement is coordinated The spin rates, the spin direction, the directionalities of spin are they're in the same direction. And because this vortex is constant, you take the vortex off, you get what you got right now. You put the vortex on, you're getting this alignment of spin, you're getting acceleration of spin, and you get a reduction of friction. You get a reduction in the size of the clusters, and the cluster sizes being down to 2 microns, they get through openings that before they were too large to get through.
Yes, exactly.
All those things.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. And obviously, it'll be an experimentation, but it's obviously one worth having, because in this unit, I can, you know, I'm just looking at it right now, and it's, you know, be very easy to implement a PW50 in the equation. So.
Sure.
It's all 1-inch lines. Just put a reducer on it. And okay, that's great.
All right.
Any other comments before we close off?
No, I'm going to actually, I'll send you, I'll make a transcript or something of this, but I'm going to use some of this description that I just had and put it on our site because this is the physics of vortexing.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And this is the thing that people are poo-pooing. And, you know, we have the results time and time and time and time again. It happens repeatedly. Victor Schauberger saw stuff like this, I presume, because he said, well, you know, this is all possible. This is all possible under these circumstances. And I think his name was Johann Grander, et cetera. People have been doing this for a long time. Grander systems for over 50 years now. And Schauberger...
Right.
And here people are poo-pooing this stuff in the quote-unquote Western conventional world.
Yeah.
It's really simply to protect the way they're doing things now as opposed to actually fixing problems.
Right.
So at any rate, yeah,
okay,
I will
great.
Do that. Okay?
So, yeah, please do send me that recording when you have it all done or tweaked up, and we'll get it over to the client and see what they have to say.
You got it. Thanks a lot now.
Thank you so much.
And thank them again, too. I really appreciate their openness. I heard that they trust you and me and Jody. I heard that, too. I really appreciate it. Quick thought, if I can get it out of my mouth. And that has to do with that clogging and stuff like that.
The fogging?
Clogging.
Clogging, yes. Okay, yeah.
One thing that they will also consider, I mentioned the sulfuric acid, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
They also would consider reducing their inputs of everything else. That includes their fertilizers.
Okay.
And so, in other words, less N because of the higher efficiencies also means reduction in the amount of debris and stuff that's created.
Right.
That should, therefore, it would begin to mitigate the clogging and the discharge issue because there's less to do.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That thought just popped up a while ago, and it wouldn't go away. So I just thought I'd say it, and don't have to elaborate much on it. It's in line with everything we just said.
Okay.
All right.